soccer, nonsense, and everything in between. Some Canadian guys talking about soccer.
All right, hello everyone, and thanks for listening to the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast, available on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. This is Daniel Squizzato, a.k.a. Squiz, and I'm joined by my two fellow writers, fellow podcasters, and fellow Canadian guys. First, a man who is keeping several independent coffee shops in business single-handedly, my fellow writer at CanadianSoccerNews.com, Grant Surridge. Grant, how's it going?
Good. Wait a minute. Why am I keeping coffee shops in business?
Well, you're always well caffeinated, well percolated.
I quit drinking coffee.
Yeah, the same way you quit smoking and quit watching and quit eating junk food and quit doing other things in your room at night when the door is closed.
And quit chasing women and playing the ponies and
all right.
quit drinking strong liquor.
Yeah, how many times have you quit drinking now, Grant?
Okay, well, I mean, I've failed to quit drinking too many times to count, but I honestly don't. I drink coffee maybe once a week.
They say two wrongs don't make a right, but what, 85 or 86 wrongs, they add up to
a right? They make a right, yes.
Yeah, good enough.
That's a wrong. You're going to put so many coffee shops out of business now?
Also with us, a man who is single-handedly putting many small flower shops out of business. He's a soccer writer for Sportsnet.ca, senior editor at Sportsnet Magazine, Jamie Doyle. Jamie, how are you?
I don't understand that reference.
Well, that's kind of the point. I always try to throw something at you that's going to keep you off balance.
I don't know how you knew about that.
What did you do, Jamie?
I hate flower shops. I think they should just grow naturally. I just like to bash in the windows. Free the flowers, I scream as I throw them out into the street.
You're a member of the Flower Liberation Army?
Yeah, that's right.
Watch out for Jamie in a balaclava liberating petunias near you.
It's also worth noting that Grant showed up today wearing a very snappy blazer.
Well, I bought a new blazer. I figured, what the heck?
We're kicking it up a notch here, formal-wise.
Well, now that he's no longer in CONCACAF, we need some kind of tangential way to get Chuck Blazer into the discussion. And
there
this is
go.
How we've done it. Good old Chuck Blazer. Anyway, on today's show, we will be getting into the Canadian representative Toronto FC crashing out of the CONCACAF Champions League against Santos Laguna. We will use that as a jumping-off point to a broader topic of discussion that many people have debated and many people will continue to debate. Should Canadian teams learn to dive for greater success in CONCACAF? We will also be joined by FC Edmonton and Canadian under-23 goalkeeper Mihal Mishevich. He's down with FC Edmonton now, getting ready for their season opener. But as of the last couple of weeks, he was, of course, with the Olympic team. He's going to tell us about that tournament, the season ahead, and which of his teammates on Canada are the best dancers. Later on in the show, in promotion relegation, we will hit on such topics as Swedish scientists, Argentinian bravado, and Italian dreams gone awry. But before any of that, gentlemen, a little bit of housekeeping that we need to do here. Wanted to give people an idea of what they can expect in the weeks ahead. Going forward, we are opening up the floor once again. We've done this before. We're going to do it again. To questions from the audience. This is where anyone listening, or anybody, I suppose, really, sends in some questions to the three of us. They can be about soccer. They could be about really anything you want. They can be serious, they can be ridiculous, as we all are at intermittent times.
We're very good at giving advice, so if you have some kind of problem,
relationship advice,
if you've written if you've written in Dan Savage multiple times and he hasn't gotten back to you, you can write in to us. We'll also ignore you.
Oh, boy.
But any questions you have, send them in to us. We're going to take as many of them as we can, maybe on next week's show, maybe on a show a few weeks from now. But we are going to give you some answers. They may not be good ones, but they'll be answers nonetheless.
They may not be right, also.
No, you almost certainly won't be. You can send them to us via Facebook on our Facebook page at facebook.com/somecanadianguys. Facebook, Facebook, Facebook. You can email them to us, canadiansoccerguys@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter. We'll name our handles at the end of the show because it kind of throws Jamie off a bit, so I don't want to derail this too early on.
I also don't like the phrase, name our handles.
Wow. Well,
all right.
I'll keep my handles unnamed. Thank you very much. Also, in the weeks ahead, we are going to be looking at the CSA election coming up. If that sounds like dry and arcane stuff, we apologize. But for people who wonder, as Jamie did in your most recent column at sportsnet.ca, why Canadian soccer can't get over the hump, can't get any farther than it is at this point, there are issues at play, the Canadian Soccer Association. There are governance issues. There's reform underway. And there's a very important election coming up very shortly. We're going to speak to some folks who can tell us and tell you what is at stake here and what could be hanging in the balance in relation to the future of the game in this country. So it's really not dry and arcane at all. It's pretty important and interesting stuff. That is in the weeks ahead, so people know what to expect. But for this week, before we get into the main soccer discussion, did you guys have anything you wanted to bring up?
Is this like a staff meeting?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. All right, we're all going to sit here and shift some paradigms and reroute some hybrids.
I need to make a PowerPoint presentation.
Those are always the best. I find that there is no business-related point that cannot be properly expressed through PowerPoint slides and crappy clip art from 1992.
And there's also no PowerPoint presentation that cannot be properly spelled throughout.
No.
There's always a wonderfully hilarious HR spelling mistake.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, you're using Word and you spell a word wrong and sometimes it auto-corrects. I think in PowerPoint it auto-decorrects. It just screws up words for you, puts hyphens where they don't belong. This has gotten nerdy quick. So let's get a little less nerdy and talk about Canadian soccer. Toronto FC, as many would have expected ahead of time, did not advance in the CONCACAF Champions League, going down to Santos Laguna 6-2 in Torreon on Wednesday evening. The score didn't necessarily reflect the course of the game. I don't know if Santos deserved a four-goal win, but a four-goal win is what they got. So Toronto FC will now be focusing exclusively on the MLS regular season until the Voyageurs Cup gets going again in a few weeks. Jamie?
Yep.
I'll turn to you first. Looking at that game, 6-2, it would suggest a complete and total meltdown, which is what some people are suggesting in the aftermath of that. Is that what happened? Was that just a complete gong show? Is there anything positive to be taken from that game and from this campaign?
You can take the first half, I suppose, as a positive.
Right until the very end of the first half. How about that?
Yeah, so the first 44 minutes would be great. Yeah,
even the first 45 minutes, I think. You can take João Plata's contribution as a positive. Now, I think this first goal was unfairly aided by him being the shortest man, the only man who could have headed that ball that quickly. If Danny Kuvermans had been in the game, it would have hit him somewhere around the belly button, I think.
He could have just crotched the ball into the goal.
There's another phrase I don't like. This is a trend that's starting to be disturbing. No, I mean, it's fair to say it was a meltdown at the back for TFC. You can't really argue it. I mean, they made all the mistakes that you could make. A handball in the box, a foul in the box, and then just, you know, terrible, terrible marking.
Failing to kick the ball while in your own box.
Yeah. Failing to stop the other guy from kicking the ball at your net while in your own box.
But then again, I mean, when you get to that point in the game, we saw the same thing happen with Santos Laguna up against Seattle a few weeks ago. The score really got run up at the end. Is that a matter of Santos just being super powerful, or is it a matter of MLS teams saying, eh, you know what, we think we've kind of pooched this one. Why don't we just get the hell out of here as quick as we can and
pooched
get out of
it.
This stadium?
Pooched, eh?
Grant, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's really a bizarre pattern. I mean, you look, it's kind of the same thing that happened to the Montreal Impact 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's terrific.
And that happened to Seattle.
See, I was...
No, I mean, it's just, it's kind of weird.
What was I doing? Finish your sentence, Quiz. I was hoping, in a way, for some historical symmetry there. Not in terms of the result, but once it got to 5-2, I'm like, all right, you know, this is something that people, you know, can hinge arguments on and say, well, you know, it was 5-2 3 years ago against Montreal, it was 5-2 against Toronto again, and then Santos had to screw everything up even more so with that needless
sixth goal. Wait a minute, what argument are you going to hinge on?
No,
that?
It wasn't an argument, it's just historical symmetry.
Oh, okay.
That it was the same scoreline.
No, I mean, in terms of symmetry, it's just, I find it really weird that these North American teams go down there and just collapse in like the last half of the second half.
I think this is...
Or is it just Santos isn't really trying? They're just kind of, all right, time to...
Santos isn't trying and they still score six goals?
No, they're not trying until 60 minutes into the game, and then they decide, all right, let's dust this thing up.
No, I think this is time to punch in
for work.
This is the effect of that vaunted Mexican crowd that everyone's so afraid of. And you get vaunted. I don't know, that's not the right word.
It sounds like just one monolithic group that just goes around.
Yeah.
It's like when two people in an old Looney Tunes cartoon got in a fight and it was just a big dust bowl with hands and arms sticking out. It's the Mexican crowd.
All right. No, but I mean, that was the big thing. You go down there and it's so hard to win in Torreon, and I think that's it. Like, TFC got ahead and were pegged back, and then once things got really away from them or to the point where they're really... You know, the game can kind of turn, and you can either turn it back or you can't. in that kind of stadium with that kind of crowd against you, you can't turn it back. And so once they got the second goal from Hercules Gomez, and then they get the momentum going into the second half, it was beyond TFC.
You know, to be honest, the crowd didn't look that intimidating. I mean, I've watched games in Europe where you have, like, in Turkey, for example, where you have entire sections.
Everything's about Turkey.
I know. Yeah. Well, there it goes. There I go again, me and my Turkey fixation. No, and you'll see the entire stand of a stadium jumping up and down. I mean, they were just there cheering. I mean, is it really that difficult to get your mind around?
I don't know. Let's all ask each other, having never played a professional game.
Well, you know what.
Well, I mean, we're speaking to Michal Misevic later on, and in the final of the Olympic qualifying tournament, of course, Canada's final game, the semifinal against Mexico in Kansas City, Livestrong Park, filled to the brim with Mexican fans. So we're going to get some thoughts from him about what that is and what that represents. But looking, I was trying to say, is there a positive to be taken in the fact that you've got a number of young Canadians who've come up through Toronto FC? You had Ashton Morgan, who's now a regular, played the game out there. You had Daniil Henry and Matt Stinson get into the game. You also had Julian De Guzman and Terry Dunfield out there, though their involvement with the national team going forward is a matter of debate. But those three young guys, giving them more experience playing in front of a hostile crowd like this, even if the result on the day wasn't the best for their club team, is that in any way useful if these guys are being considered for the national team player pool going forward?
You know, we always ask this question. I certainly hope so. I mean, I guess we'll find out this June. I really hope it's useful.
It can't. I mean, how useful can it be to have experience losing 6-2?
Well, you have to lose, right? Before you can win, as they say. That doesn't really make any sense.
No, not really.
Not unless, I mean, the Chicago Fire won the MLS Cup in their first year. Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup in their first year in Colorado. Okay, so if you're Canadian, then you have to lose and lose and lose and lose before you can win. My point being that this kind of exposure to the environment in the stands, something as simple as the temperature on the pitch, just the whole atmosphere around the park, is something that I think it's good for Canadian players to get ahead of games that will be played in World Cup qualifying, where obviously the teams, you know, Mexico, Honduras, Costa Rica, whoever it may be, that's what they're accustomed to. And they're going to use that environment to their full advantage. And I think any preparation for that Canadian players can get can only be seen as a positive.
Yeah, I mean,
I think looking at the silver lining of that horrible result last night.
I think you're looking pretty hard for that silver lining.
Yeah, my new role is the optimist. I feel very strange. I feel like
I don't know how you do it, frankly.
Like when I was in high school wearing a suit, it just didn't fit right, and there was usually mustard stains, but I still had to kind of pretend that it.
Why were you wearing a suit at high school?
Well, you know, when you go to any kind of functions where you're required to wear a suit, you don't own one, so you have to.
Oh yeah, right, high school.
Blazer Grant over here probably owned several suits.
Grant, did you also borrow that blazer from your dad? Is it three sizes too big?
It's my own blazer. It is a little bit big, though. But.
Oh, don't let the person who bought that with you hear that.
There's room for you to hit the gym and fill it out.
Exactly.
What I wanted to get at with this here, we didn't see it so much from Santos Laguna in the second leg because they didn't need to, because they were winning by a sizable margin by the end of the game. But something that Canada confronts all the time in World Cup qualifying, and something that Canadian teams confront in the CONCACAF Champions League when playing against certain club teams, is the issue of diving, time-wasting, embellishment, that sort of play. And I want to be clear that I'm not singling out Santos Laguna. I'm not singling out Mexico. Every country in the world, every team in the world, there are players that are going to attempt to deceive the referee. Every sport, you know, football, basketball, hockey, any sport where there's physical contact, players are going to try to embellish to get on the good side of the referee. In soccer, it's so much more important because one kick, one goal can have so much more of an importance on the outcome of the game. That being said, no one can dispute, based on empirical evidence, that a lot of the teams in CONCACAF tend to use this tactic very frequently and very well. And so the argument always comes up, is it worthwhile for Canada to, for Canadian players, especially in World Cup qualifying, to stay on their feet? Or should, if the goal is to win and get to the World Cup, should Canadian players start adjusting themselves to realize if you're going to win in this environment, you need to utilize certain tactics that those other teams are going to be utilizing one way or the other? Jamie?
Now, I used to be on the side of, no, we're better than this morally. We'll take the moral high ground. You know, as you get increasingly jaded as a Canadian fan, it gets harder to hold that line. But I think there's one question here that doesn't need to be addressed, but I'm going to address it anyways. And it's the difference between, like, diving and embellishment. So there's, if you're playing with a CONCACAF referee from Central America who's used to seeing a huge flailing expression every time a guy is fouled, if you get fouled legitimately and you make it noticeable, that's one thing. That, I think, is okay because you're not going to get the call from the ref otherwise in a lot of cases in these games that we play in Central America and the Caribbean. Straight-up diving, no, that's embarrassing for everyone. You know,
unless you do it really well.
Even if you do it really well, it's embarrassing. It's even more embarrassing to be like, it's, you know, it's like saying I'm a really good liar. I'm really good at cheating on my wife or something.
You
don't
admit it. You know. That's the whole point.
I'm going to take
the
moral.
It's only wrong if you get caught, Jamie.
I'm taking the moral high ground. No, because everyone gets caught afterwards. Everyone knows the ref doesn't catch you, but everyone else has seen it a thousand times. But, no, because everyone watching has seen it a thousand times. Everyone's just, that was probably a dive.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the question, though, right? I mean, sometimes it's really hard to tell whether or not it was a dive.
All right.
I mean, of course it is. I mean, if it was easy to tell, then we wouldn't be having this debate because referees would look at it and laugh and not make the calls. So that's what I mean is, you know, I'm not going to get into any sociological or cultural discussions here because that's some dangerous territory. But suffice to say that a lot of these teams in CONCACAF, the idea of deceiving the referee is ingrained in the way that they play the game. And so they've developed the ability to do it well, to do it convincingly sometimes. And so that's kind of what I'm getting at. Is it, from a fan's perspective, do we want our national team to look at it and say, no, Jamie, as you said, take the moral high ground, screw it. If they're going to flop all over the place, let them embarrass themselves. Or if at the end of the day, if the goal is making the World Cup, do Canadian players need to go out there and do whatever is necessary to help themselves win?
I think at this point, they just need to get better at soccer. I mean, I think, no, I mean, I think you're raising, it's kind of a dangerous discussion to have. Like, and you're also sort of assuming they don't dive already, right? I mean, we're coming at this presuming with this question that, oh, I mean, Canadian players, none of them would ever dive. And I'm sure a lot of them would have dove and would dive in the future. In terms of, do they maybe need to be a little smarter about doing it? I could see that, sure.
Yeah, I think it's not just diving, but it's things like, you know, time wasting or just ways that you manage the clock. Grant, we were watching one of the Olympic qualifying games, I think it was the semifinal, and you made the comment, I forget, it was one of the Canadians who's playing in Uruguay, it was either Cavallini or Fursenga.
Right.
And, I guess it would have been the semifinal, Mexican player kind of came behind him trying to win the ball and he went down and you said, oh, you know, he really knows how to win a foul.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that means?
Well, no, it kind of reminds me of how when I remember Michael Ballack when he used to play for Chelsea. He was very good at sort of...
Now you've forgotten him.
No, I mean, when he was very good at getting the game stopped at very opportune times for Chelsea. And I don't necessarily think he was diving, but he just maybe, at least at times anyway, when he wasn't trying to assault the referee, he sort of knew how to work them. And maybe that's kind of what I was getting at earlier. I think, you know, you don't need to necessarily set out to dive or flop around for, you know, 30 seconds on the ground with your hands over your face. But maybe there are sort of smarter ways of doing it in terms of managing the referee.
So it kind of sounds like you're saying that.
And I only said that about those two guys who were playing in Uruguay because I just assumed that they would have learned that there. Right.
Oh, I mean, we kind of said on. Like on last week's show, we kind of waxed rapturously about all of the wonderful things that the players had presumably learned in their time in South America. But that's kind of speaks to the point, though, doesn't it? That it's not necessarily as simple as saying, "Well, Team X dives and Team Y doesn't, so we're good and they're bad." It's a matter of kind of managing the clock and managing the referee and things like that.
I think that's one small part of what Canadian teams in general need to do to start winning at the international level.
Yeah,
to frame it as this, you know, we're good enough. We just don't dive. The other teams are cheating, and that's why they beat us.
I don't think anyone's saying we're good enough.
Yeah, I mean, I mean that's the thing. It's not as though if Canada dove more, we'd all of a sudden be on par in terms of technical skill with Mexico or whatever other countries. But I remember the opening game of the 2007 U-20 World Cup, and it was Canada and Chile, and the Chileans were obviously vastly talented and were overpowering the Canadian team. Final score is 3-0, I think. And the flopping that they were doing in that game irritated me like no other,
because I really don't understand.
Yeah, it's almost as though, I mean, if it's a narrow game and you're trying to get that one little sliver of advantage over an evenly matched opponent, from a psychological standpoint, you can almost understand it, saying like, all right, you know, these are two evenly matched teams, so each one of them is playing this game of chess, trying to get the one-upsmanship. But when you're taking a team out behind the woodshed and you're still just making a mockery of the game and of yourselves, that's the most aggravating thing.
But
they got tased after the game, so I felt better after that.
I mean, but it's when the guys on Barcelona do it. I mean,
is this really necessary?
I agree with Grant. I mean, Barcelona.
Oh, you would, wouldn't you?
Against almost anyone, Barcelona doesn't need to, you know, do anything dubious to get that sliver of advantage. They have it coming in. They're probably the best team on the pitch, no matter who they're playing.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about teams that could set an example, I would think it would be Barcelona. I mean, I don't
in what regard
in terms of embellishment, just the whole sort of like. You don't need to be on the ground for 20 seconds holding your face and then just up and at it right away.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to add that extra bit of play acting.
No, but again, getting back to what Squiz was saying, and this isn't a thing that these guys feel that they, you know, we only have to do this because we're not the best, and now that we're good, we don't do it anymore. It's just a part of the game, and you just do it because you were brought up to, you know, to see it as another part of the game.
The way I kind of look at it, and I'm loath to make hockey comparisons, although I do it quite a bit, it seems, is that I think the way to look at diving and embellishment and time-wasting and all these things that Canadian fans seem to get so irritated about when other teams do it is you kind of look at that behavior in the way that you look at a goon in hockey. You know, I mean, when he's playing for any other team, you just think that he's a dirty scoundrel, piece of garbage. Why is that guy in the league? He serves no purpose. He's just an embarrassment to himself and to the league and to the sport. And you check the waiver wire and, oh, look, your team has picked him up. Well, you know, he's got sandpaper. He's got grit. And, yeah, I mean, he has his failings, but he can help us out. And, yeah, you know what? I mean, every other team has goon, too, so we may as well have one because we're just trying to get on even footing. I mean, isn't this just a case anytime Canadian fans talk about Mexican or Honduran or whatever other teams trying to deceive the ref like that? Is it more or less sour grapes at the fact that our players aren't doing those same things in an attempt to win?
Well, no, I think it's more just sour grapes because they didn't win.
True enough.
I think it's just pure. I think it's mainly just sour grapes.
So, all right. So, in an ideal world, Canada qualifies for the World Cup based purely on its clean and sterling morality, its ability to stay on its feet and play the game the right way. But in the unfortunate contemporary realities of CONCACAF, Grant, what's your final verdict?
I mean, as I've said this whole show, I think that they should. That is a very small part of the game that they kind of need to master, but it's far from the only thing they need to get better at.
Jamie?
I've just got one thing that I've got to get back to. And Grant mentioned Barcelona as the kind of example of a diving team. I think that's just Grant's sour grapes, because
it is my sour grapes. I'm an extremely sour person.
Quite a viral and very well-documented video on YouTube of Lionel Messi not diving in all these cases when just about anyone else would. Like, he's that good.
He's not known as – I mean, players get reputations, right? Because now in the age of YouTube, when you make
like
a particularly ridiculous dive,
yeah.
Like Andy Carroll, I don't know if you guys saw that on the weekend. Like, that thing was just – I don't know what he was doing. But when you do stuff like this, you get a reputation, and then that affects the psychology of the referee. It's just
The reputation doesn't extend as far as it doesn't penetrate your bitterness, because you still think Barcelona is the utmost of
diving team.
Well, no,
I wasn't talking about him. I was mainly thinking of Busquets, but whatever.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, on that note. Yeah.
Good and bad. The
diving.
End.
Yeah. Well, it's I like that we take on these completely intractable issues, and then we just close the book on them.
There it is. That's it. Solved that problem.
I mean, you know, ultimately, every player is going to go out there and do what they're going to do. It's not as though there's some edict from above from national federations.
I thought that's what this
that
was.
Say,
this is the edict from above.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, right, because
we're settling this once and for all right now.
The answer to this
question... Nobody's allowed to discuss it anywhere ever again.
I think the answer to the question is no.
All right. What's the question?
Yeah, sorry, what was it?
We asked it a while ago.
Six times nine.
Yes?
Sure. Well, we're going to move on from that wonderful little debate to have a discussion with a young up-and-coming Canadian player who may have a chance to be representing Canada in World Cup qualifying in the years ahead. We saw him in Olympic qualifying in net for the Canadians over the past 2 weeks, and we'll be seeing him this season in goal for FC Edmonton. Joining us after this will be goalkeeper Mihal Mishevich. Joining us now on the line from Sunrise, Florida, FC Edmonton goalkeeper Mihal Mishevich. Mihal, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're down in Sunrise, Florida with FC Edmonton right now, preparing for the season opener on Saturday as FC Edmonton kicks off its NASL campaign. We're going to be speaking about that in a little bit, but before we do that, we want to go to the events of the last couple of weeks. The men's Olympic qualifying tournament, you were in goal for all of Canada's games. It was quite a roller coaster ride throughout the tournament and even within a few games. So looking back at that tournament now, generally speaking, how do you feel about the team's performance?
Overall, I mean, I was proud of the guys. We did quite well. I would say, obviously, you know, right after it happened, I was disappointed. You know, we're there to go all the way. That didn't happen. But overall, now I've had a few days to think about. Now I'm with FC Edmonton, and my goal is now to look upon the season with them. But if I look back on it, I'd say overall, you know, we had some pretty strong performances. But we, you know, we stuck together as a team. I'd say that really showed. So overall, I'm happy. I'm proud.
You mentioned sticking together as a team, and as someone watching the games and seeing what the players were, not only how they were performing on the field, but the things they would say in post-game interviews, the sort of comments being made on social media, it seemed that even though this team didn't spend very much time together prior to the tournament, that there really was a bond established between these players. I think I saw a couple of players, you may have been one of them, use the word family as reference to this collection of players that got together. So what was it that allowed you guys to connect so strongly, even though, as I said, you didn't have very much time to prepare ahead of the tournament?
I mean, that's true. We didn't have that much time, but, I mean, we've had camps over the years, right? And we knew each other, so it wasn't like we were complete strangers when we came into that camp. Everyone almost knew everyone. There were a few new faces, like the young guys, but I think what helped was because we knew we came into this tournament with a disadvantage. It was because we didn't have that long to prep for it. So I think we tried to grasp everything that we could to make it into positive. So things like, you know, to bond well as a team, I mean, that helps a lot, right? And it shows. So I think we kind of thought, you know, if we can do that, you know, it'll help, you know. You see that over time, like teams that bond well together do well over the long run. So I think the thing that helped was just, you know, positive thoughts all the time, and, you know, everyone wrote us off, right? And we didn't. We thought, you know, we can do this, and we stuck together.
Mihal, going back to the last game against Mexico, can you describe that feeling for us coming out there and having that huge crowd of rowdy Mexican fans cheering against you?
For me, like, I can only speak obviously for me personally. It's a great feeling. That's what I live for. You know, it's I love the noise. I love all that, and I love proving. It didn't happen against Mexico, but, like, the American fans proven, you know, the American fans and and shutting them up, you know, and it happened against Mexico for a minute when we equalized, and, you know, and they're just like in stunned silence, right? And the feeling's great, you know, when you walk out, and it basically was an away game for us, right? But it's better to hear something out of the crowd, the atmosphere, than your silence, right? So it's for me, it's not nerve-wracking. You know, when I get on that pitch on my warm-up, I stop thinking about people around me. I just focus on my game, and the same when I walk. I mean, when the anthems are going for the national anthems, it's kind of like, come on, let's get this started with. And then after that, I don't think about it. I get on with my game.
So did that kind of atmosphere, does that compare to anything you experienced, say, in Europe?
No, at this point. I mean, I had a few games in Europe, but that was the loudest. I mean, also the Strong Stadium is quite close to the pitch, right? And you're having 16,000 Mexicans just screaming and playing their drums and all that. It's enclosed, so that sound just stays in there. That's the biggest crowd I've played in front of, and definitely the loudest. You couldn't hear the guys from. You know, I was trying to communicate with my defenders, and they're like 20, 30 yards away, and you couldn't hear anything. So,
Mihail, you mentioned playing in Europe, and one of the stops, and you've made a few in Europe, was at Polonia Bytom in the Polish Ekstraklasa. My girlfriend's father, my girlfriend herself is actually from Bytom, and her father is a huge fan of the team, and he keeps telling me this one story about how the team doesn't have, or at least didn't have, its own stadium because it's a mining area of Poland, and they just kind of mined underneath it, and part of it collapsed. And you seem as good a person as any to actually verify this story, which seems kind of untrue.
They have their own stadium, but it is that's true. It is close to a mining, coal mining facility, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But it's no, they have their stadium.
There's always seemed a bit made up.
It's not the biggest stadium. It holds, I think, 6,000, and it's not. They've got one big grandstand, and then they've got like some seats here and there. When I was there, I heard like the ground is kind of like it never gave away over there. You couldn't see it or anything, but I heard some kind of rumors. Like, I'm not an architect or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on exactly underneath there. So. But I know our building was kind of on a slant. The field was okay, but the building was a tiny. Walked in, you could see the boards weren't. If you put a ball on the ground, it would roll to the.
Yeah.
I guess that definitely had a big part to play. You know, you win the coin toss at the start of the game. You definitely want to be going downhill in the second half, right?
like I said, the field was okay. It was just
Okay. Well, the clubhouse.
All I'm going to take from this is that I have a player from the team who says that my future father-in-law is just kind of full of it. So the next time he brings that story up, and I know he will, I'm going to tell him that you told me that he's just completely full of it. that's not a...
Okay.
Okay.
Now, as we mentioned, you did spend a number of years over in Europe. You spoke a lot about your European experience on the It's Called Football show a little bit earlier this week. So I'd recommend folks listen to that as well to get more of that side of the story. But what I'm going to ask about is the transition that you made to come back home playing for FC Edmonton, playing in Alberta. It seemed to catch it caught a lot of Canadian fans by surprise, I think. It kind of seemed to happen fairly quickly. So how did that come about, making that transition to come over and play for FC Edmonton and join their roster earlier this year?
My whole process, my thought process was I wasn't getting the high-caliber games in Poland near the end of the season, like the first half of the season before the winter break. And I decided that I had to make a change. I still had a year and a half on the contract. I came to mutual agreement with the team, terminated the contract, and I found myself in FCM. What happened was I knew I had to prep myself for the for the Olympic qualifying games, right? I knew that, you know, if I did well in that, things would kind of sort their way out, right? So I just thought I have to get to a team, you know, that has a good coaching staff and would give me the coaching that I need. And that's what happened. I found FC Edmonton, and they were willing to take me on.
You grew up in Alberta. How does it feel to be playing for a team in Alberta?
It's nice in the fact that I'm close to home. For me, it doesn't matter that I can play anywhere, but it's a bonus that I'm close to home. It's nice. I haven't been around my family for the last 6 years, so that's definitely a plus, and maybe it'll even show in my game. Maybe that was something that was lacking, you know, it could be deep down. You never thought about it, but maybe it was.
FC Edmonton, I mean, we mentioned the kind of family feeling you got with the Olympic squad. FC Edmonton is almost a miniature version of that with a lot of young Canadian talent. There was Sean Sykes, who was with you at the under-23 tournament, and then there's Kyle Porter, who just narrowly missed out, and David Monsalve, who's just a couple of days too old pretty much for the tournament. Is that kind of an exciting thing to be a part of a team that's young and is full of young Canadian talent?
Yeah, it is exciting. This team just started, right? It's a new franchise, and I think it's going to start to get more and more exciting for the city itself of Edmonton. You know, it's still in the building process. Last year was their first season, and you know, we just want to build onto that and make it better and better. And I think this team, they try to get their young players, you know, and make the players better and better. And like you said, it's full of young Canadians, so hopefully they can, in the near future, we can go on to bigger, better teams and make the men's national team for Canada stronger as well.
Michal, does anyone ever recognize you out on the town in Edmonton?
No. That hasn't happened. No, it hasn't happened.
But nobody recognizes us either. I mean,
no, that never happened.
Yeah.
Do you get the sense that there's sort of a buzz about the team within the community? Is support growing?
You know what? I was there in the off season, starting January, and we left for Phoenix for the preseason on March 5th. So, I mean, before all that, it was just training. A lot wasn't happening, and I haven't been home since March 5th. So I'm not sure what it's like back in Edmonton at the moment. But I'm pretty sure it's gonna, when the summertime will come and the NHL season will stop, right?
It stopped for the Oilers months ago. So
focus on then the Oilers, so they might focus on FC Edmonton.
Yeah, and I guess nobody's really out on the streets of Edmonton in January to be recognizing anyone in the first place.
Exactly, that's the thing. So you know, summertime will come and our season will kick off. Our first game is on the 22nd, I believe, of April, our first home game, and then I think it should start from there.
You mentioned the team. Moving up, improving the pool of Canadian talent there. We've seen in the last few years a number of teams that have won the Voyageurs Cup, the Canadian Championship, go on and make some noise in the CONCACAF Champions League. Of course, Toronto FC got to the semifinal stage this year. Montreal Impact got to the quarterfinal stage a couple of years ago when they were in the second division. So looking at this and knowing about this, does that get you excited about the potential of FC Edmonton? Obviously, they come into the Voyageurs Cup as a bit of an underdog, being the second division team against the Whitecaps. But seeing what some Canadian teams have been able to do in the Voyageurs Cup and then in the CONCACAF Champions League, does that get you excited about what this young Canadian Phil team might be able to do if you guys put it all together?
Oh yeah, it is. It's exciting. It's another big stage, right? If you can get to the CONCACAF Champions League, then that's a big thing.
So, Michal, we tend to ask this of all the players who come on our show. I'm just curious, what kind of tunes were you guys listening to in the U23 at the Olympic qualifying tournament? What kind of music were you guys listening to in the dressing room?
In the dressing room?
Yes.
It's kind of like, I would say it was more upbeat, kind of fast, David Guetta kind of dance music, stuff like that. Something, you know, that gets the blood pumping.
You're the first guy who hasn't said Drake.
But players, you know, they still have their own headphones on. They're listening to whatever they want to listen to. But it's fast music. I honestly can't tell you. I didn't pay attention that much. I was just focusing on my game.
So I know
after the games we had what's that song called?
I can almost guarantee you we won't know.
It's all the footballers like dance to it. Like Neymar did a dance to it on YouTube.
Oh, we've got to
Spanish
find this.
I think it's Spanish. Portuguese.
A Brazilian song, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know.
Did Ronaldo do some
like
kind of
dance to it and all that? So, and we were doing it after the U.S. game, you know. So,
wait, who was dancing to this song? Was somebody doing like the Neymar dance in the dressing room?
Yeah, there were a few of us.
Oh, my.
Are you willing to name names?
Yeah, sure. There was Russell.
He's kind of got Neymar. He could do some Neymar hair if he wanted to.
Russell was there. I think
Marcus. Marcus Randy? Must have been there. Randy?
Randy. I'm trying to. There was a third. There were four of us. I was one of them, and then I was trying to do it. You know, they were the best. The three of them were. There was someone else. Like I don't want to put a name. I can't remember who it was.
Can we say it was Samuel? Let's say it was Samuel.
I don't think it's Sam.
All right, just say it was.
We were saying Sam. Come on. He was like, no. So I thought they were all thinking he was going to call it, but he didn't do it.
Since we don't know who it was, I'm just going to assume it was Tony Fonseca, and we'll move on.
That has been Michal Mishevich joining us on the line from Sunrise, Florida, preparing for FC Edmonton's first game of the season. Michal, good luck with FC Edmonton this year, and good luck in your footballing future.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks again to Michal for taking the time to talk to us. Of course, in that time that we had there to take a break, we looked up the name of this video, this song, this dance that he was referring to that was on the tip of everyone's tongue. Couldn't quite remember the name of. Grant, I'm going to put this in front of you.
I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this.
It's short words, short syllables. Just give it a shot. It's like Breckshay. Just try it.
But it's the number of short. This is the name of the song that we're trying to pronounce. It's in Portuguese.
It is Portuguese.
I say you te pego. That's not very going to be good.
Google Translate says that the definition or the translation in English is there if I get caught.
Any other translations?
Yeah, actually, it kind of works in Spanish. It says I hit you. So that's kind of two of the Portuguese words, but then hit you. And then there's also Italian. The AU, if you go pego. Now, I'm sure there's a ton of people out there who are familiar with this song, speak Portuguese, and think that we're complete idiots right now, and you're right.
Well, it's not any worse than when we didn't know what Watch the Throne was.
No, that's true. At least this isn't in the right language. Also, there if I get caught.
Also, Michal brought up the fact that one of the players dancing in the locker room with this song was Randy Edwini Bonsu. If you watch the video, you kind of see what the dance looks like and what the words may mean. I think this gives us some insight into what that mystery red card might have been about. Because no one can quite figure it out.
Dancing?
Well, he may have, there could be lewd sexual gestures in that song. Perhaps that's what he did towards the referee. Or maybe EOU hit him and got caught.
Dancing, and that's just what it looked like.
Well, I mean, for anyone
He was dancing, and the referee misinterpreted it.
For anyone who hasn't seen the video, and I guess we'll put it up on our Facebook page, but it's roughly like a kind of Macarena with some pelvic thrusts at the end.
I was going to say Macarena is what I was kind of thinking of.
It's that kind of like you stand in one place and you do things with your hands and it's all set, and then at the end you just kind of do some pelvic thrusting.
As opposed to standing in one place, doing pelvic thrusting, and then doing something with your hands.
I thought there was pelvic thrusting in the Macarena.
Goodness.
It's been a while since I've done it.
Yeah,
so,
also old men in hats doing that. I don't want to think about them thrusting
their hands. When was the last time you were at a wedding in the 1990s?
Probably in the 1990s.
Yeah, probably.
Well, this being the last part of the show, we are, of course, going to get into promotion relegation, which is the part where each of us picks a story we like and promote it and picks a story we don't like and relegate it. Plural, singular. Well, whatever, I've lost
Relegate.
Track. Grant?
Yep.
Fire up your little internet machine in your hand.
I don't have my talking points today, so I'm going to try to do this off my BlackBerry.
Is that a Canadian-made product?
I'm sure the product itself is
They're made in Canada.
Are they really?
Yeah, yeah. I worked at the BlackBerry plant.
Being from Kitchener-Waterloo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I make an active effort when talking about smartphones to say BlackBerry rather than iPhone. Man, I hope Rogers doesn't have a advertising deal with Apple.
I've got a Rogers BlackBerry right here.
All right. Grant.
Yes.
Promote something.
I am going to promote Swedish scientists. Specifically Swedish scientists who have discovered that elite soccer players have superior executive functions relative to non-players. This means there's a significant correlation between their cognitive function and the number of goals and assists they rack up.
No.
So now, which for me is fascinating, because what this means is that for someone, say, like Leo Messi, inasmuch as he brings enjoyment to everybody, to people all over the world. With his superb soccer skills. Imagine if he had, because he's such a genius on the pitch, imagine if he'd become like a neuroscientist or something, or gone into something else. Imagine what he could have done for humanity.
Nobel Peace Prize.
Now he's just,
I see what you've done. You've brought it around. You've taken a universally beloved player, but you're throwing him under the bus because he got into something as frivolous as athletics.
No. I'm not throwing him under the bus at all.
Medicine or whatever.
I'm just saying this proves, maybe this dispels the dumb jock stereotype. But
Grant.
What you're saying is that as good of a football player as he is, he's a bad human being because he's not a doctor.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying I'm just putting it out there. Imagine if he had like broken his foot as a kid or something. I don't know. He couldn't play soccer, and he just
He had some kind of health problems as a kid.
Yeah, like I don't know.
Imagine that.
He'd have to move to Spain.
Exactly. And he had become some kind of amazing scientist. Who knows? Who knows what could we all?
So Grant, you're saying for the good of humanity, back in time. And
he would have invented a time machine.
Yeah, but how would you get to him to make that happen if...
Hey, it's just like the Back to the Future movies where the old Biff and the new Biff can see each other, but for some reason if Marty McFly sees himself, the whole world ends.
Grant, if I go outside...
It's like Time Cop.
Yeah, like if I go outside and I see an old, police box from London in the 1960s outside, I'm going to run like hell.
All right.
My promotion. Grant, you mentioned that there's a correlation between, like, really good soccer players tend to be intelligent. I'm going to refute that directly.
According to Swedish scientists.
Mario Balotelli.
First of all, when you said Swedish scientists, Squiz, did you also immediately think of the Swedish chef?
Bork. yeah, I was actually going to say it, then figured it was racist. But I've said it now, so sorry.
Okay. I'm going to
refute. If Jim Henson can do it, I can do it.
I'm going to refute Grant's. Soccer players are intelligent, the better they are, by going ahead and promoting Diego Maradona for getting into a brouhaha in the stands at a game of the team that he manages in the UAE. Al Wasl is the team that he manages. His wife and some guests of his were at the game, and apparently the fans were, quote, verbally abusing that whole party. There's a hint that it might have had to do with the kind of the region, and then the fact that Diego Maradona's wife was kind of, her head was uncovered and she wasn't dressed as some people
assumed. He was making a social statement.
No, I think she was just being herself at a soccer game, and some people took exception to it on whatever grounds they took exception to it on. And so Maradona went up there in the middle of the game, I believe, and just started, trying to get at these guys and really wanted to have a bit of a fisticuffs. He referred to them later as cowards and, he was just being this kind of machismo, and he went in there and went after them. And I'm actually promoting also the club, because if you imagine this happened in England, if a coach went into the stands specifically to punch out a guy, which is exactly what Maradona would have done if he had gotten to the guy that he was after, he'd be fired. He'd be blackballed. It would be awful, and there'd be tabloid stuff all over the place about what an evil person he is.
I don't know. I mean, there's some North American precedent for that. We've got guys, hockey players who went into the stands to assault fans in their playing days, and now they're highly regarded commentators.
Mike Milbury.
Is he on Sportsnet?
I
forget.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway, he's great if he is. If not, who cares?
But the thing is, Al Wasl said, and I quote, "The Al Wasl Football Company finds Maradona's behavior understandable. It's what any honorable person would do." I like that very much. Because, it's one of those double standards where it's just like, yeah, well, if that happened to me, I would punch that guy in the face. But then you expect, but you know, it happened to this guy, and you have to fire him because he, you know, he's the coach of a team that I don't cheer for.
It's like we were talking about earlier with the diving stuff, man. Yeah. It's good for the goose, but no good for the gander, or other way around.
Is Maradona the gander?
I don't know. He's not really the goose.
It's a gaggle. I know that they come in, all of them together is a gaggle.
You know what crows are?
A murder.
Yeah. You know what pigeons are? Damn it, I forgot.
Is it a parliament? No, that's owls. It doesn't matter.
I think it's parliament of owls?
Yeah. I think it's a neighborhood or something of pigeons. What the hell is it?
People make this. Somebody's just sitting there on a Wikipedia page making all this up.
Well, we're going to have to jump in our time machines, go back, and make sure those people never made those.
You know who would know? Leo Messi.
Exactly.
If only he hadn't played soccer.
Yeah.
Wasn't that guy on Santos Laguna called the goal scientist?
Yes.
Maybe since he gets sent off so often, he can spend some time in the lab and come up with something productive.
They just need a bigger sample size.
Productive for humanity. I'm going to promote, literally and figuratively, a team that I promote quite often when I write and when I speak on this show. That is the Canadian Women's National Team, specifically their upcoming game on May 30th against China in Moncton, New Brunswick. Mission Moncton. Woo.
So are you going to go to that?
Grant, why are you putting me on the spot like that?
Because it's fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that I'm kind of in a no-win situation here. I mean, if I don't go, then people are going to say, well, Squiz, you've been yakking about Moncton for years, and now you're not going to go to the game.
I'll say that.
And if I do go, then I lose my job, and, you know, I fall back
Does your job have a no-Moncton sort of clause written into the contract?
Yeah, it's remarkable. I really should have read that thing more carefully.
Wait, I can't go to Moncton?
It says no homers. We're allowed to have one.
If you just call in sick, they'll never know. It's not like you've been out there writing and talking all over the world all over the internet. The internet is the world, by the way.
True enough.
It's not like anybody knows that you'll actually be at a soccer game that day.
Last time I checked the Canadian labor laws, and I who am I kidding? I've never checked them. But
I think
I think you do. You are allowed.
Everyone has
to take
some vacation. Everyone has a Moncton allowance.
No, I mean it's you are allowed to take days off.
You get time off for sickness, time off for maternity leave, time off for Moncton.
Well, you're not an indentured servant. Yeah. You are allowed to not go to work certain number of days.
You don't know that. I mean, you know, there are plenty of people in Moncton, in New Brunswick, in the Atlantic provinces who like the game of soccer. Whether or not they're, you know, the big fans of the Canadian women's national team right now, they can be soon enough. So I'm promoting the fact tickets are now on sale. They are quite inexpensive, relatively speaking. And, there's going to be a post going up on CanadianSoccerNews.com later today, kind of talking about the game, and there's a link that'll be in there to where people can get tickets. And, for people in the Atlantic provinces who want to show that there is interest in the game out there, I would say find a way to Moncton, get to that game, and show the CSA that when they're deciding where to put games in the future, that city and that stadium are on the radar.
Well, as many tickets are sold, there'll be one sad, empty seat waiting for you to show up.
A seat doesn't have feelings. It's plastic or metal.
One crying,
maybe they can kind of
moaning
make like
seat.
A plasticine sort of statue of you, just so you're there, you know?
Yeah, that's in no way horrifying. That's in no way horrifying. I also don't like the fact that
plasticine? That would melt or something.
I don't know.
Nobody makes
a scarecrow, a squiz scarecrow.
A life-size silly putty squiz.
A murder of scarecrow squiz. What?
We're going to murder you, Squiz. That seems to be what's going on.
An
where this
owl
is going.
Parliament of Squiz. Grant,
yep.
Relegate something, please.
Okay, I'm going to relegate Jose Mourinho. For comments he made.
Awkward pause.
Done. Yep.
For comments he made after the game, I believe it was yesterday, when Real Madrid won and advanced into the semifinals of the Champions League, he basically said he was giving a post-match press conference, and he declared that Barcelona was the super favorite to advance past Chelsea. And then he kind of said, well, you know, we all know that Chelsea's not going to win. He said, we all know Chelsea's... I don't know what he said. Hold on a second. Because now I'm getting confused.
More top-quality research.
Exactly.
Man.
I just don't think it will be Real Madrid versus Chelsea, and we know why. He ended off like that.
Whatever might that mean.
Insinuating that, you know, there was going to be some sort of dark arts happening and Barcelona was going to get these calls in favor of them and that it's all sort of conspired to have Barcelona in the final.
I took that a different way. I would have construed that to mean we know why they won't make it because I'm not managing them.
Yeah, it's weird when somebody says, and we all know why, and then some people are just like, I don't actually know why.
I hadn't looked at it that way, but I think
you
most
only
people,
read the first two paragraphs of this story,
no,
didn't you?
No, I think most people took it as him kind of saying Barcelona gets these quote-unquote favors from the referees that the other teams don't get, which is, I mean, as much as I'm happy he's trying to screw with the referee of this match ahead of time, because I'm a Chelsea supporter, it kind of takes away, any time a manager does that, and managers do that all the time, it does kind of take away the...
They don't do it all the time in games they're not playing in.
No, they do it all the time. And, you know, so-and-so team, they get all the decisions. It makes it harder for a referee to sort of, you know, if he sets out to ref this game and everyone's saying that, oh, you know, Barcelona are going to get all these favorable calls, it does make it harder for him to be neutral.
You know what?
What?
Roman Abramovich just needs to get a boombox, stand outside Mourinho's window, play it at full blast, win him back, and get this over with.
Can he have a piece of cardboard and be breakdancing when he does
yeah,
that?
Yeah, sure, why not? I mean, I'm tired of this arm's-length dance that they've been doing for the last whatever number of years it's been, desperately trying to find his replacement for the hole in his heart left by the special one. Just go back to Chelsea and be done with it. Also, Grant, yes, this ref psychology stuff, I mean, it doesn't hold water. I mean, it's...
What,
you know,
what, are you a ref?
Well, no, well... Supposedly. You know, UEFA Champions League semifinal, Barcelona and Chelsea, two massive teams like this, important game. Like, reffing is not going to come into the question here.
No, you're right. True.
It just wouldn't.
Why would
no historical precedent.
In a game.
22 professionals on the pitch. Yeah, why, yeah, exactly. Why,
it's,
you're right.
It's not going
right
to have any influence whatsoever.
What the hell am I talking about?
Jamie.
Yep.
Who or what would you like to relegate?
I'm going to go ahead and relegate Dundee United. SPL, I don't know, middleweight, I guess. yeah.
SPL non-Old Firm club, meaning the others.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I'm relegating them for having a good player, essentially, which seems unfair of me. They've got a young guy, up-and-comer. I mean, their whole team is kind of a young and relatively successful team, I suppose, by SPL standards. But Gary McKay-Stevens seems to be the one that the fans have really latched onto, and they have these songs where they compare him to Leo Messi, which he is like, and, you know, he's kind of embarrassed by this, and he gets a lot of flack apparently from his teammates because the fans are comparing him to the greatest player possibly in history
and scientist
and, yes,
and doctor,
and one of the greatest failed scientists in history,
exactly.
And it just seems, I mean, come on, you've got a 21-year-old who people agree is good, and the fans have decided to really like and are compared to Leo Messi. Just, what are you making fun of him for?
You're
Dundee United, a team with like over 100 years of history. You've won the league twice and the cup twice. You're in fourth place, I think, at the moment in a league that has two teams, and we all know it. I would say just you should be praising him. You should be doing whatever it is you need to do to keep him there, because if he is that good, he's probably going to be
my
gone.
My question was, why is he still playing for Dundee United?
Yeah, well, I don't. Maybe it's because he's been shamed so much by his teammates.
He has no confidence.
Yeah,
anymore.
Absolutely. He can't go out of, can't leave the stadium even.
He's world class. Then, if he's world class, he should play for Toronto FC. World class city deserves world class players.
Total football.
Oh yeah, baby! I am going to relegate a fellow by the name of Andrea Masiello, whose name has come into the news as of late. He is part of the latest Italian match-fixing probe. He was a defender for... I should have read this more closely before I started reading on air. Oh, yeah. Now I'm stealing Grant's thing. Defender for Bari, who scored what turned out to be allegedly an intentional own goal in a match towards the end of the season last year against Lecce, I believe. He has admitted to being offered €50,000 to help the result go in a certain way. And, you know, I mean, I don't care about either of these teams per se. I mean, I guess I'm just relegating the fact that this crap continues to happen in Italian soccer. I mean, you know, everyone remembers what happened with Juventus a few years ago and how that permanently crippled them. Oh, wait. And I also remember there's a book that a friend of ours, Ben Knight, was like on me for months to read. You got to read this book. It's so great. It's a story. It's an author named Joe McGinnis. Wrote about following this team called Castel di Sangro in like the Italian fourth division, and just, you know, it's just this wonderful story, like a small Italian town and the town rallying around the team and everything, and they make this wonderful, magical run to get promoted that nobody ever would have expected. And it's, you know, it's really quite a good book. I mean, I'm going to spoil the ending here, so if anyone doesn't want to hear it, don't listen to the next 30 seconds or so. But the end kind of leaves a sour taste in the reader's mouths, because kind of the last thing, the note that you leave on, is the team throws a game. I mean, they've already been promoted and they're throwing a game against some other team because the other team is trying to not get relegated or something. I mean, I read it a while ago, so I don't remember the details. And the approach that all the players had was just, yeah, whatever, that's how things get done here, you know, whatever. And so, I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about the Italian game and the ins and outs of it to know if it really is that systemic and that, you know.
It doesn't sound like a happy way to end a book.
Well, no, it's not. That's why. It was like a really good book. And I'm like, oh, cripes. It kind of ends on this note of moral outrage. It's not really good, but it still is a good book.
You grow to love the team, and then you're just like, well, now I hate them.
Well, yeah, pretty much. But that's the thing is that people keep getting these sour tastes in their mouths about Italian soccer, which, again, I don't care about per se, but as somebody who's carrying around an Italian last name, it makes me...
You got it right there in your suitcase.
People ask me questions. I get associated with this by proxy. I have nothing to do with it. I don't know how many people are responsible for this or whether or not it's systemic or what's going on. But seriously, people with Italian last names, stop doing stupid crap. It's making the rest of us look bad.
You know what's a good cure for a sour taste left by an Italian?
What's that?
Cannolis. Delicious. Sweet.
Well, from one Italian stereotype to another.
That's where we've gone.
Yeah. Once the mics go off, I'm going to swear loudly at you and then possibly gesticulate wildly. And then, you know, whatever. I'm going to stop there.
Yep.
Speaking of tastes, this is normally where we would get on to the part of the show we call Taste the Trivia, our weekly trivia challenge, where people can win stuff and provide questions and all that. But we had a bit of a doozy this past week. We expected that given the question, there was going to be some differing answers, and there were several people who provided answers. One of them was correct, told the person to get a hold of us, never got a hold of us, reached out to another person, didn't get a hold of us in time. So we do not have an official winner for Taste the Trivia this week.
We don't know what to do.
Which means, Jamie, you can take that time out of your week where you'd normally be mailing out the Umbro swag and use it on something else. And I'm going to use this part of the show to say to the people who were involved at this on our Facebook page, check the messages I sent you. And you know what? There's two of you that I sent messages to. First one who gets back to me and emails me, you win the prize.
Didn't they have different answers, though?
They did have different answers, but I mean, like, the person who gave the right answer, they had a lot of time to get back to me, and they didn't. So I'm peeved now.
All right.
So I'm giving that runner-up a chance to come in and usurp things.
Be careful, listeners. You're starting to wind up Squiz.
Yeah. It's like the Highlander now. There can only be one.
You wouldn't want to wind me up, because then stereotypes would kick in, and I'd really...
Yeah, you should see how wildly he's gesticulating with his hands.
Yeah, actually, it's not even stereotypes. As you said, Grant, when we were watching that Canada-Mexico game, you know, if you think the stuff I was putting on Twitter was horrible and offensive, you should have heard what was coming out of my mouth.
It's true.
But anyway, to those folks, one of you, get in touch with us, please, so we can do Taste the Trivia as usual next week. But we are still inviting folks to get a hold of us for questions from the audience, as I mentioned earlier. Probably next week, if not the week after, we're going to be opening things up, answering whatever questions.
You know what's going to happen now? Everybody's going to email you about Italian football.
That's
going to go. That's what all the questions
Squiz,
are going to be
about. What do you think about Palermo's chances? Don't care. Squiz, do you remember Milan back in the day? No. So if that's what they're going to be about, I have no useful answers to provide on that. But if you have other questions about soccer, about Lionel Messi as a scientist, about us, or about whatever else that you want us to answer on this show, send them in, and we will get to as many of them as we can on a future episode.
The more ridiculous, the better, I'd say.
Yeah, it kind of helps us out. It gives us a leg up. You can leave them at our Facebook page, facebook.com/somecanadianguys. You can email them to us, canadiansoccerguys@gmail.com. And you can send them to us on Twitter. Grant, if someone wanted to reach you on Twitter, where would they go?
Well, they would log on to their nearest computer.
Goodness gracious.
Or mobile device.
Or mobile
possibly
device,
their BlackBerry, made by Canadian company Research in Motion.
And they can find me at SCGGrant.
Jamie, what about you?
I'm at Doyle_Jamie on my mobile device.
And I am on my mobile device and elsewhere on Twitter at Daniel Squizzato, DanielSquizzato. Jamie, I slowed it down for you a bit.
It just takes so long.
That's not my fault, man. That's another burden that I have to bear.
Italian-Canadian.
Yeah. Ah, well, I get a lot of points in Scrabble, so it's worth something, I guess. We will be yammering at you again next week. Until then, we are, as always, some Canadian guys talking about soccer.